One of the moms after the clinic came up to her and shared, "Hey, I was hesitant to bring my child in because I was just a little hesitant how you might react to the state of my children's teeth," something along those lines. And in fact, what she found from the care that she received from Amanda was non-judgmental, kind. Like, it was such a great experience that it those fears melted away, and she would be so happy to share about this service with her network, her friends and families, and to bring her child in again.
Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytonay and Tsintiaan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Welcome back, listeners. Our subject this week is public health, and in particular, child dental health. And for this, we're returning to the northeast of the province, to the community of Fort St. John, which has a population that leans towards young adults and families. Our guest today identified a gap in care related to the dental health of newcomers to the city, which they sought to close through quality improvement. Here to talk about their QI work are today's guests from Northern Health, public health physician Dr. Diana Bark, and Director of Public Health Lara Frederick. Welcome to the show, both of you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Now, before we get to your quality improvement work, I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you came to find yourselves in your current roles. For example, why did you choose public health? And should we start off with you, Lara?
Perfect. That sounds great. Well, I'm just so happy to be here and talk to everyone, and wanted to tell you a little bit about myself and how I came into public health. I've been a longtime resident of the northern part of our province, and when I went to university in Prince George, I completed my Bachelor of Science in Nursing. Shortly after, I started and completed my Master's of Nursing, and was lucky enough, once graduated, to find a perfect public health position in the small town of Chetwynd, British Columbia. And since then, you know, I haven't been able to leave. Public health has just drawn me in and kept me there. So I'm coming up on 20 years in public health and focused mostly in the northern part of our province.
That's great, Jody. Thank you, Lara. And what about you, Diana?
That's amazing to hear your tenure in public health, Lara. I am only a year plus now into my role as medical health officer, so not quite as long. Early in my career still, but what got me into public health is, I think it started with taking some sociology courses, in fact, in my undergrad. And there was a sociology of health and illness course, and it totally blew me away, the socioeconomic gradient in health outcomes, and that just has never left me. And so I think with that background, going into medical school and having my clerkship rotations and kind of witnessing the revolving door phenomenon for patients who would come into acute care, receive the care they need, but upon discharge for some, they're going back into the environments that kind of led them to needing the care in the first place. And I think that was another motivation for me pursuing public health, is how can we work in the upstream part of health.
That's also a great story, and it's lovely to have you both here. I think you might be the first two representatives of the public health sector, actually, we've had on this podcast. So kudos to you. Moving on to your QI work now, you identified a gap in care in dental health, particularly in northeastern BC. And I wondered whether you could tell us a little bit about this gap, what it was, and what was the potential impact of this gap on patients and the broader health system.
Maybe I'll start here, and then Diana, you can comment on a bit of the epidemiology side of things. But in my work in Northern Health, I was overseeing a team of dental hygienists and assistants, and we were particularly looking at early childhood caries in the under 5-year-old range, under 6, 5. Yeah, that's typically where we focus. And what we were seeing is there was just an astounding rate of early childhood caries in this population. And particularly different was when we compared it to the province, which I know Diana's going to fill us in on a bit of the epi side of things. But what we were finding is we were seeing a lot of families come in with their children to the clinics, you know, with active decay and the inability to connect to dental practitioners, and at times even having to undergo operating room procedures. And so the cost on our healthcare system was quite great. So we thought we would dig into this a little bit and see what was maybe underneath all of this issue and where we could have some impact. So maybe Diana, if you want to talk a little bit about the epi side of things, then I can talk about why we wanted to focus on newcomers particularly.
For sure. The dental public health team conducts a survey of kindergartners. This is a provincial effort, in fact, to assess the state of kindergartners' teeth. So they're looking for caries. Are there any decayed, missing, filled teeth? And that helps us to monitor the oral health status in our population. And when we looked at those results for Northern Health, the rates of early childhood caries were higher than the provincial average. So we knew that there is some work to be done. And the other point I think Lara covered really well was the hospital-based treatments. Again, in Northern Health, we see higher rates of that compared to other parts in the province. And those invasive treatments, the cost is one thing, and the experience for the patients is another important one to consider for the children. So if we can have measures that help prevent the need for more invasive treatment, like in the hospital setting, that will be really positive for our families.
And one of the things that Diana and I started to look into then was, you know, what types of populations are we seeing the most burden? And what we were finding with one of our wonderful teammates is that there was this a large population of newcomers to Canada residing in this little northeast pocket of our province. And we were seeing this influx of newcomers into the northeast pocket. And the uniqueness of this population is that these newcomers are not eligible for the Canadian Dental Care Plan until they have filed taxes and met a number of requirements. So what that did was it, you know, put them in a place of, you know, not being able to access dental care, covered dental care, and thus creating a bit of disparity. So on top of that was also, you know, some language and cultural differences, some financial barriers, as I mentioned, to dental care. And this was leading to this population of newcomers experiencing worse oral health care. And Diana, I don't know if you want to continue on that thread and talk a little bit more about some of the language and cultural disparities we were seeing in this newcomer population.
Right. Maybe what I can add is we're not, this challenge is not unique to the Northeast. It's something that has been described in literature, other jurisdictions, seeing that the language barriers, the cultural barriers, financial barriers, system navigation, all these things pose a challenge when it comes to newcomers to Canada seeking oral health care.
So you've done a really good job, like setting up the context around health disparities and how they can, and their association with the social determinants of health. And so, in terms of your project, what did you learn about the contributing factors, and how did this inform your approach to tackling this?
That's a great question. Maybe I'll jump in and first talk a little bit about some of the barriers. So, what we were particularly seeing is that the primary intake to our program that we were running was through some client finding processes. So, what we were actually doing is doing a caries risk assessment at a 12-month immunization appointment. So, it was clients that would be families that would be coming in with their children for their 12-month immunization appointment would then be offered a bit of a screening tool, and they would be assessing their child's oral health status. Now, At first glance, this might seem like a really appropriate way to find clients. But when you peel back the layers, you see that, well, in fact, not everybody may choose to immunize, not everybody may be coming into the program, and thus we're missing a large population of people. Also, when you think about those that might be accessing these services, might not be the population that we're trying to reach. So again, we were finding that we're maybe missing the mark with the really at-need population. So we started also exploring some of the system navigation, as Diana was talking about, and the awareness of these programs broadly. And when we think about newcomers coming into Canada, they may not be aware of all of the healthcare system and the accessibility that they have to different systems. So we started thinking about, how can we advertise? How can we create more awareness of these programs for this population? What are some of the barriers getting in the way, like language? Like we've mentioned, are flyers in the right language? Is our advertising done in the most appropriate way? So those were some of the things we started learning that were contributing to the problem that we needed to really address.
Serendipitously, our community dental hygienist connected with a newcomer, mom, from the Ukrainian community, who suggested, "Hey, in my community, I know all these children like who would really benefit from your services, and I think that a drop-in clinic would be a great way to reach those folks." And that's where this idea came from. How do we do the case finding in a community-centered way, appropriate for the community context? And that involves engagement with the community. You have to hear from the members. So that was the other thing we tried to do is make those connections, get their advice on how do we promote our services? What are the needs? And get all of these community-based knowledge to inform how we do what we do.
How did it go in that process, and did you encounter any challenges during the project?
We were fortunate to partner with the Northeast Immigration Services Society. They were such a fantastic partner in this process. They're serving this community, so they were embedded within the social network, so they were able to use and draw upon their existing networks and communication pathways to spread word about our services, and even provide interpretation at the bedside as needed. And for that drop-in clinic that I alluded to earlier, it was from what Amanda, our community dental hygienist who held the clinic, described, there was really an atmosphere of being with community. It was like a component of that socializing aspect as well. And I think that leads to a comfortable environment for folks to show up. And so that was really positive. Amanda also sought out other organizations who would interface with this population. So she went to the local Service BC office, and they were more than happy to share the poster we had created to promote our services. Community Bridge was another nonprofit that she connected with. And the other one that comes to mind was European Foods, which I understand is a grocery store, but also like serves this population. So those were fantastic experiences for the team.
We also had a couple challenges. Some of the things that we did encounter during the project around the challenge piece was because we're in the north, weather can be a barrier at times. And with a drop-in format, what we did experience was we had set up a drop-in clinic at an elementary school. And unfortunately, there wasn't a turnout. That was actually because one of the school buses wasn't running. And it was the first time in this region that we had had a really good weather day. So a lot of kids and families weren't coming into the school setting where we had planned this clinic. So that inadvertently led to no turnout. So these are some of the factors and challenges we had to think about just because of where we are operating our work. And then the other challenge is really something I think we all face now, and that's around workload. We have few practitioners. We've talked about Amanda, and we have limited resources here, and we do have to balance workload with opportunity and impact. So some of those challenges Diana and I had to navigate along the way and figure out how to have a good outcome, even though we were experiencing some of these challenges.
You're right. The constraints of staffing, it's universal at the moment. So I've got to ask you, how did you get on ultimately? Did you manage to make a difference? Were you ultimately successful in your project?
I think the short answer is yes. Hard numbers wise, we did manage to find children who were eligible and who could benefit from specifically the silver diamine fluoride treatment that we based our project on. And so we got new folks enrolled, new children who received treatment. So that's fantastic. But I want to say that is only a part of the picture because the harder to measure results, the qualitative findings, maybe that's where I really want to share is I think success is also seen in the relationships that we built along the way. And I'll share an anecdote here. Amanda shared that one of the moms after the clinic came up to her and shared, "Hey, I was hesitant to bring my child in because I was just a little hesitant how you might react to the state of my children's teeth," something along those lines. And in fact, what she found from the care that she received from Amanda was non-judgmental, kind. Like it was such a great experience that it those fears melted away, and she would be so happy to share about this service with her network, her friends and families, and to bring her child in again. So I think every time that we can make a good provider client relationships like that is trust in the healthcare system, trust in the healthcare provider, trust in Northern Health. Like those are also the success factors that we're seeking to achieve through our quality improvement project. So that's one example.
And also, Diana, just thinking back to the staff satisfaction, seeing the excitement and joy in Amanda's eyes with doing this work, and her eagerness was really, such a success marker to me. Also, thinking about those community connections and all of us really feeling like we are making a difference. That's huge. That brings joy to our work and our lives. And then ultimately too, the return on investment. So each SDF or silver diamine fluoride treatment that we were able to offer and give to families, could have averted hospital-based care. So that that is something that's difficult to measure, again, as we've said, but anecdotally, we can say that we've likely reduced the impact on some of our acute care services.
That's great to hear. And that's a wonderful result as well, both quantitatively and qualitatively. And you're right that the value of that trust in the healthcare system is enormous. And there are so many misconceptions out there in the population about, as you say, grounded on trust or lack of, and that greater understanding and building that trust is priceless, particularly in this population. So thank you for sharing that. And I've got to ask, what did you personally take away from the process? What will you take away from your QI training and from this project? It sounds like you've already told us you found it rewarding, but in what way?
For me, it relates back to what we were just talking about, which is relationships. I really appreciated connecting with a new team member that I haven't worked with closely before, and we were able to dive deep in this project. And it's always a joy to work with new people. And the PQI coaches and the staff, the instruction and other colleagues in the work, and knowing that if I were to embark on a future quality improvement project, knowing that I have these amazing supports in place, it gives me more confidence to tackle. So yeah, those were some of the highlights of my experience.
Yeah, and I think for me, I've really valued the thoughtful, structured PQI approach, and thinking through how to address a really complex problem has been really eye-opening for me to take it step by step and really map out what are some change ideas, where can you actually have impact, and then find success even when you might, at first glance, think you weren't successful. You can actually see that there are many successes out of processes that you've taken, and also just this new language to think through quality improvement and have these types of conversations with other staff and people in the workplace around quality improvement has been that language has been really empowering. And then finally, of course, as Diana was alluding to, the networking with other QI leaders and this opportunity for me to dive into this world of QI has been just exhilarating, and I'm really thankful for this opportunity.
I also appreciated the chance to apply health equity. I think in public health, this is such an important concept. And in health system more broadly, we are always thinking of where are those disparities? How do we address them? How do we close those gaps? And so this was an on-the-ground example of how we can try and tackle health inequities. So, and it's something that has renewed conversation within the dental team about how, what can we learn from this to inform our broader programs.
Well, thank you. And that's actually a great place and a really positive note to finish up today's interview. Thank you for that. It's been wonderful to hear about your work and how quality improvement can be helpful in this specifically in the domain of public health. And congratulations to both of you on your success as well, and particularly the impact of the project, as you say, on health equity. So thank you both for joining us today. Unfortunately, we have to wind things up. As always, as a token of our thanks, we'll be sending each of you one of our exclusive and highly coveted QualityCast North coffee mugs.
Oh my.
But
Yay.
for now, it's goodbye from us here at QualityCast North, from our guests, Dr. Diana Bark and Lara Frederick, and we're your hosts. I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.